This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Welcome to HRN Happy Hour. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and somewhere is Bushwick. We're back in Bushwick, people. I'm Kat Johnson, the communications director here at Heritage Radio Network. And joining me today is a lot of people. This is maybe the most full the studio's ever been. From the HRN team, I've got Michaela Heck, Sam Lee, Lila Goldstein, Sarah Strong, Liza Hamm. Is that everybody? I'm like making sure I counted everybody. That's the HRN team. Katie is on the road today. She'll be back next week. Today's guests are some very old friends of ours. Just outside the studio in the booth, we have Patrick Martins, the founder of this very network and Heritage Foods USA. Hey, Patrick.
Thanks for having Team Heritage.
Anytime. We also have HRN host Mike Edison, who is also an honorary member and physician for...
Infection.
Oh, okay. There
Staff infection.
We also have the rest of the Heritage Foods USA team. We've got Emily Pearson. Hey, Emily.
Hi.
We've got Ben Tanzel.
Hi.
Patty Lee.
Hey.
Catherine Greeley.
Hello.
And Elizabeth Greeley.
Hi.
So, yeah, this is a very, very full house, but we're all in here cozy and comfortable. We're going to chat more with them later, but first we've got HRN headlines. And, oh, I'm so sorry. I forgot to mention David Tatasciore. How dare I?
Yeah, thanks.
There he is. So we're going to chat later, but first we have headlines and some event announcements. But first, I wanted to recap our week at Charleston Wine and Food. We spent last weekend in the Holy City at one of the nation's very best food festivals, talking to some of the most talented chefs, winemakers, farmers, and writers. We recorded 15 hours of live radio for HRN on tour from the heart of the culinary village, and you can listen to all of it at heritageradionetwork.org/on-tour. We spoke with some really amazing people, and the conversation should not be missed. David and Liza, I wanted to ask you, because you guys were in Charleston with us, what were some of your highlights of the weekend?
That tuna.
Oh my gosh. So we went to this party at the Dewberry Hotel, which is like the big after party of the festival. And
it was real austere, real simple, right?
Yeah. There's like crabs, and there was a 700-pound line-caught tuna. They were making, you know, tuna rolls with truffle shaved in them. It was very...
That bar was unnecessary.
Yeah,
just
it was.
For the record.
It was absolutely wild. But Ian Perkistanza from Regalis Foods and William Sonoma put that party together, and
AKA
it was
Truffle Boy.
Bonkers.
And that's they did make sure that the tuna that they did not use that was still wonderful, they donated to some homeless shelters in the area. Aww. So that was good.
Yes, that was good. It was a very fun party and glad. And yeah, so some of the content highlights, we talked to Jessica B. Harris, Glenn Roberts.
I was going to say Jessica B. Harris.
Yeah.
And Sarah Franklin, I believe the two of them were talking about the legacy of Edna Lewis.
That was a super, super highlight.
Incredible.
Yeah. So go check out all those interviews. We also had a very special episode of HRN Happy Hour that we recorded as our last hour of the festival. And at that point, we were all like pretty much delirious.
I think that was the point that your voice just went bye-bye.
I was just
absolutely. I was like, welcome to HRN Happy Hour. And but our fan, Neil, said it was his favorite episode. He loved the energy. Got him very hyped. So shout out to Neil for making me feel like I didn't do so bad after all. Yeah. Any other highlights, guys?
We ate really well. Like,
yeah.
I can't think of one bad bite we had, right?
Exactly.
So, from Fig to the Darling to Hominy Grill.
Thank you, Robert Stelling, for once again feeding us.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
Bog shrimp.
My favorite thing was we ordered tomato pudding at Hominy Grill, and it was so good. And he came out after the meal and we asked, what is that? And he said, it's canned tomatoes, butter, sugar, and white bread or cornbread, whatever I have. That's white trash cooking. And I was like, that's what I want. It was perfect. Check out all that content. We had a really good time, and we can't wait to do it again next year. All right, so now we're going to move on to our headlines.
All right, on Monday, Japan Eats host Akiko Katayama spoke with Tokyo-based photographer, author, and dining consultant Andrea Fazari about her new book, Tokyo New Wave, The Next Generation of Tokyo Chefs, that released on March 1st. Andrea's relationships with Tokyo's most influential and respected chefs gives her a unique insider perspective.
Quick correction, that is coming out on March 13th, I was told by Akiko today.
I can't hear.
Teaser!
Yeah.
I didn't have headphones on.
Okay, that was all I had to say. So who's next?
This week's Speaking Broadly featured a guest with a remarkable story, Valerie Lomas, who won season 3 of The Great American Baking Show. Lomas's achievement was a point of pride for both herself and her community, but when sexual misconduct allegations came out against one of the show's judges for that season, Lomas learned that the season would never air and her accomplishment would fly under the radar. Lomas spoke in depth about overcoming this pain and disappointment with host Dana Cowan, and the conversation is really worth checking out.
On Meant to be Eaten this week, host Coral Lee spoke with Carlos Baca and Neftali Duran of iCollective, a group of indigenous chefs, activists, herbalists, seed, and knowledge keepers who are trying to rewrite history and educate the public about native food pathways and the agricultural and culinary legacy of Native America. Listen to their discussion about defining indigenous food sovereignty, how colonialism has impacted health and identity, and finding ways to present a more honest cultural history.
Cutting the Curd introduced a new member of the team this week, producer Elena Santagade. In addition to producing, Elena will be hosting the show once a month as well. Learn more about her in this week's episode.
And on Beer Sessions Radio, host Jimmy Carboni sat down with Jens Reimer from To'ol Beer in Denmark. I had to Google that earlier, how to pronounce it. Mike Amade from Torst and B.R. Rolla from Shelton Brothers for a post Beer Week 2018 chat.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey. I'm Jimmy Carboni.
All right, so that's just a taste of our content this week. You can listen to all 35 of our weekly shows at heritageradionetwork.org. We also have a few events coming up this month that we wanted to share with you.
So this coming Monday, March 12th, host Dana Cowan will be interviewing Martha Hoover at South by Southwest in Austin for a special episode of Speaking Broadly. So be sure to tune in.
And on March 13th, Snacky Tunes Live is taking place at the El Rey Theater in L.A. The evening will feature an interview and an intimate performance by soul singer-songwriter Nia. Interview and food from chef Michael Wexler and Michael Kassar of Wexler's Deli, and a DJ set from Them Jeans. Tickets for the show are $30 and include a plate of food.
And on March 22nd, we're hosting a So You Think You Know Mezcal, an educational tasting, again here at 100 Bogart from 6:30 to 8 p.m. It's being hosted by SACRED, which is a group that stands for Saving Agave from Agriculture, for Agriculture, Recreation, Education, and Development. Tickets are available now, and you can find more information at heritageradionetwork.com/events.
So check out all those events. You can check out Heritage at South by Southwest in Austin, in LA, and here in Brooklyn. So no matter where you are in the country, you can come hang out with us during March. All right. So once again, I want to turn back to our guests, Heritage Food USA. Thanks to everybody for coming and hanging out. I just want to start by quickly going around and everyone introducing themselves and telling me, you know, what you do at Heritage Foods. Ben, do you want to start?
Sure, I will. So I work in the warehouse, director of warehouse operations, sort of taking care of the inventory, receiving, sending out packages.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I'm Emily Pearson. I'm director of wholesale sales. I don't know why I said that twice. Wholesale.
Sale and sales.
Yeah, exactly. So we move about 200 pigs a week, nose to tail, and we sell all of our cuts and whole animal to chefs and butcher shops around the country. So I organize where everything is going every week.
Hey there, I'm Catherine. I run the mail order department at Heritage. If you go on our website, heritagefoodsusa.com, you can purchase meat from heritage breed animals, all varieties, pork, lamb, goat, beef, etc.
Turkey.
So, turkey, absolutely.
Don't forget about the turkey. Was that a dinosaur? I'm not sure.
The sound bite's too long.
Yes, all of those.
So I'm Elizabeth Greeley, most importantly, Catherine's sister, but do the shipping at Heritage Foods and also the marketing and really, you know, trying to let people know about who we are, what we're doing, and drum up some excitement around it.
And I'm Patty. I'm the in-house chef and photographer, and I also head the customer service team, which is all of us.
So many powerful women here today.
International Women's Day. Yeah. We're getting more to that later. Yes.
So I'm Mike Edison, and I'm sort of the minister of propaganda, copywriter, and I write pork copy. And, you know, I also do a show here on the radio station, on Heritage Radio. What do I have to do to get Arts and Seizures in your headlines?
Oh, good question. Good question.
We had a porn star on last week who's won her industry's equivalent.
This is a seizure, nice. Dave.
First, who won her industry's equivalent of the James Beard Award?
Really?
What are those awards called?
The Adult Video News Awards, the AVN Awards. I'm not going to tell you what she won for, not on this show. I don't want to scare.
Uh-oh.
Scare all your food nerd listeners away.
Our listeners about to tune in to Arts and Cheese.
But it was piquant, you might say.
Oh. Yeah, so tell people who maybe don't listen to every HRN show, tell us what Arts and Seizures is all about.
the bastard stepchild of this whole operation.
Yeah, yeah.
We're pretty much a free-form, sprawling, fastest 30 minutes on the air. Now we have porn stars and wrestlers and a lot of rock and roll on. And last week I was doing food songs, though. We did songs about pork and chicken. We played a record. Now, you guys don't remember this, but once upon a time, sometimes records were stamped into cardboard and you can get them on the back of a cereal box. Count Chocula had them. I remember playing the Archies from the back of a box of Sugar Smacks, but the one we played was the bottom, literally the bottom of the bucket, this record was the bottom of a chicken bucket, like a bucket of fried chicken from Chicken Delight, and it was the chicken twist. So we do food content occasionally.
Maybe Heritage Foods could start doing that when you order.
Yeah.
Do you have the technology?
We have the technology.
Do we have the technology? So I want to kind of ask for anyone who's listened to our show before but isn't like familiar with the history of the radio station and the connection to Heritage Foods USA, can you guys kind of explain what the term heritage means and how it relates to the meat that your guys are selling? Patrick, you want to step in there?
I mean, am I serious? No one knows the definition of heritage.
Patrick, step up to the plate.
All right, listen. First of all, Ben also runs our charcuterie program.
Corrections.
Emily's Jewish mother and mine would like to know that we do sell things other than pork. We sell turkeys, goats, ducks, geese. Catherine, very humble, actually started as an intern and now owns 20% of Heritage Foods. So she sounds a lot more humble. Elizabeth, as a Greeley, also humble, is actually starting a whole new scanning program for us and relaunching our website to be modern.
Ooh.
So two things she did not mention. Patty is not only a chef and photographer, but she also has become a professional at doing breed tastings. Those are like vertical tastings where we taste like five breeds of lamb leg, five breeds of pork chop. So she's probably one of the most experienced people to know about nuances of different breeds. And Mike... actually, I would under-exaggerate some of the stuff he said. Just kidding.
But no, seriously, Patrick, like, can you like give a quick synopsis of like what heritage means? I think that we can't say it enough.
Well, heritage turkey, to be a heritage turkey, you have to live a long time, 15 years instead of two. You also have to be able to reproduce naturally, which factory farm turkeys and chickens cannot do themselves. And to be heritage, you have to be a breed that can be traced back prior to 1945. Mm-hmm. So that is really, you can apply that to pigs and other things. Those are the three. There's no such thing as a new Bible hero, mm-hmm. as Mike wrote very eloquently. And so you can't just make a heritage breed in the factory farm right now and give it a name and claim its heritage.
Mm-hmm. And was it last week that we had Frank Reese visit us? David, did you get a clip of Frank Reese by chance?
I did. You want to play that?
Well, let me have... Elizabeth, do you want to set up kind of like what Frank was here for and visiting and what we talked to him about?
Sure. So Frank is our poultry farmer. And so he came up to talk about everything he's doing on the farm. We love when he comes and visits. He's really who we look to as, you know, the father of heritage breeds and genetics, and can come and educate us. We had a few dinners around him when at Untitled, it was an amazing dinner, a tasting. We had his duck, his chicken, and his turkey, and it was wonderful. He came in here, and we did some radio segments. We also had a tasting at the warehouse with him, and got to get some people, you know, in the neighborhood to come out and meet the man behind, you know, the legend, because mm-hmm. he really is. Have anything to add? And it was really amazing to speak with him. Okay. It was really amazing to speak with him and learn just about genetics, because we, you know, we work with his turkeys all the time. People have all these questions, but he, you know, he's out there on the farm with these animals and he knows so much about it and he's so passionate, and to talk with him and to just, you know, we learned so much.
He also just has a really amazing sounding voice. So I want to play this clip of him so that people can really hear the man behind the meat.
Well, probably one of the things I always like pointing out to people if they come visit the farm, they're going to see something at my farm you will never see at any other type of industrial farm. That's old birds. I've got some hens that are 10, 12, 14, 15 years old. They may be walking a little funny. They may should be showing a little arthritis, and, you know, just like humans, they start showing their age. And you would never see that on any type of commercial farm for various reasons. The turkeys don't live that long. Plus, they put no value in honoring the aging of an animal. You know, part of the reason why I keep some of those old turkeys is because they've worked for me, you know, for 12, 14, 15 years. They have the right to die a natural death. And that type, you're just not going to see. But I just want to bring, that's probably one of the biggest things that is different. The other thing that you're going to see on my farm that you won't see other places is male and female turkeys together. All the industrial turkeys being produced out there, the toms and hens never see each other in their entire life. The toms are kept in one building and the semen's collected there, and they take it over into another building and they put it in the hens. And so at my farm, you may see turkeys having sex, you know, and there's been a number of visitors, you know, walk through the building and they look down and go, oh my gosh. I said, now there's natural behavior. You know, a lot of the animal rights groups go on about wanting animals to have the ability to perform natural behavior. Well, I can't think of anything more natural. The other thing you're going to see, you won't see it, is a hen sitting on eggs and hatching them. And the hen still having the genetic ability and the understanding within her to do that and to mother, to be able to raise. I always have chickens that hide out under my porch or whatever, and I have what I call my yard chickens that I don't water, I don't feed, and they survive and they grow and they do fantastic because they still have that ability to do that. So that's probably some of the things that I think you'll see that you won't see at other places.
That just makes me wonder, like, is it Thanksgiving yet? Because I'm like, I want to eat turkey again.
We have turkeys all year round.
That's true.
Now, they're naturally breeding only once a year. So we have them fresh once a year for Thanksgiving and for Christmas. But you can eat turkey all year round. We're even going to do some grilling with turkey, I think, this year. That's in the cards. Ben's breaking out the charcoal. right?
Oh, yeah.
So,
and we have very creative recipes, turkeys in ways you've never thought to have before. Very different than just the Thanksgiving.
But that's super interesting, too, because people often think about fruits and vegetables being seasonal, but not animals and meat. And so can you guys talk a little bit more about why meat is seasonal and what are some of the seasons for different animals that you sell?
Catherine, that's you.
Sure, yeah. Frank mentioned it in his clip there, but, you know, most industrial raised animals are all artificially inseminated. But the farmers that we work with all mate their animals naturally. So, you know, like we heard the turkeys, they all, you know, that's kind of why turkey was eaten at Thanksgiving, because that was what was available to be harvested at that time of year.
And they're hatching right now. Frank had to get back to his farm to hatch the turkeys. Yeah. He was very excited about it.
Yeah, so the first turkeys just hatched this past week. And then we have other animals, or like the lamb, for example. They mate twice a year, and the animals grow. The babies grow, and they're available, you know, in the spring. Traditionally, you hear about spring lamb. Other animals like pigs are mating all year round, so we can continue to have pork all year round, which is really great for a lot of these farmers who, you know, for example, Frank was getting, you know, and other turkey farmers were receiving a check once a year from us because they would raise all the animals all year round, and then. And so it was sort of, what other animals can we raise so that we can, you know, continue to get paid and continue this process of farming throughout the whole year.
What about Goat-tober? There's a specific reason that you are trying to push goat in October.
Right. Goat-tober is a great one. Goat is very similar to lamb in the size and sort of the life cycle. So the goats are born actually around this time of year as well, March and April, and it's called kidding season. And then they're raised on, you know, grasses all in the pasture all year, all spring and summer, and then they're ready for harvest in the fall, October, which we've renamed Goat-tober.
Goat-tober. Get that goat while you can. And it's you're having restaurants partner with you and like putting goat on the menu, so it's a good time of year. Is it only in New York, or are other cities doing it as well?
The way it works, and this was started by Aaron Fairbanks, former executive director of HRN, and Ann Saxelby of Saxelby Cheesemongers, and Patrick's wife. And the idea was that the male dairy goats didn't have a purpose, mm-hmm. and they were just being euthanized, and they were not really playing a part, for lack of a better way to say it. So Aaron and Ann together, I think it was 7 years ago, maybe eight. I don't know, Patrick can chime in. But we've been doing Goat-tober, or we call it no kid or no goat left behind in October. This past year, I think we had about 140 goats and maybe more than 30-40 restaurant partners. So it's New York, Las Vegas, San Francisco, and we even ship some down to Charleston. We have a few chefs, Robert from Hominy Grill, mm-hmm. and Trace at Sorghum and Salt, and people who really like to get on board and support this and be part of the movement. So look out for that as we get closer to the fall, but we always post a list of who's doing goat specials. Just and the chefs take whole animal.
That's 140 a week for 4 weeks. So,
oh,
you know,
I'm sorry.
We're raising about, like, you know, 700-800 goat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Forgive me, a week.
The first time I ever met Erin actually was she was doing an event with Matt Rudofker from Sambar, and I was working with him at the time, and he did a goat pho demonstration at Astor Center, and it was really, really cool and very, very good.
It's also an opportunity for chefs who like to work with whole animal, mm-hmm. but it's on the smaller side, so it's not something that's too overwhelming. So we don't deliver the goat as cuts, we deliver it whole, and our chefs will post awesome videos to Instagram and time lapse, and they literally use every part nose to tail.
It's So cool. All right. Well, I think what we'll do now is take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll ask you a few more questions about life at Heritage Foods. And then we have some trivia, and our theme this week is International Women's Day. So stay tuned. I love
trivia. This is the story of men and women who shed not only their clothes, but also their...
Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Thank you, Roberta's. All right, we are back with the Heritage Foods USA team. They are our friends, our neighbors, our confidants. We really are so connected to them in so many ways. And we are connected through, obviously, Patrick Martins, who is the founder of both Heritage Foods USA and Heritage Radio Network. Patrick, are you still in there? I can't see you.
Yeah, for all our listeners who aren't watching, you know, I am in the studio because there's so many people in the studio. Right? I mean, I'm in the
booth.
The booth, sorry.
Yes. You have like a real position of power.
Yes.
In the booth. So you were just saying that you have so many great people that work with you.
Do you want me to say my favorite in order?
Yes, please. Right. From best to worst. So Patrick, what do you think is the biggest difference between when you first started Heritage Foods USA and now?
Catherine, can you answer that?
Everyone keeps defaulting to Catherine.
You know, it's very hard to predict the future. You can just draw references from what you've seen, you know, to try to predict. You need experience. You need corporate culture around something so you can predict and feel a little bit more confident about the ups and downs and be prepared for them. So really, in large part, it turned when Catherine started working with us, but it's gotten so great with Emily, and you know, it's just a great team, and Patty, what she's doing gastronomically for the office. I mean, it's just really such a great team that it's a lot easier. You know, we figured stuff out on the farms. We figured out annual things like breeding and stuff. We figured out daily things like invoicing and sales, and it's starting to, you know, there's a corporate culture now that used to not exist. And especially with endangered breeds that grow very slowly and seasonal animals that only come out once a year, it takes 5 or 7 or 8 years, which is just 8 times, you know, to learn certain things. So it's, you know, pretty great.
How many farmers did you work with when you started, and how many farmers do you work with now?
Well, they all came through Frank. He would be at the top of the family tree for all the farms that we've ever met, with rare exception. Well, you know, the pig farms anyway, in the Midwest. So, yeah, we're probably the primary source of income for... And when I say we, I mean the chefs and our mail order customers. We're just the liaisons. But I would say probably 70 to 80 families in agriculture rely on this community / restaurant supported agriculture program.
Yeah, cool. Do you guys have any other stories of like some of your favorite farmers that you work with?
David Newman is one of my favorite farmers. He's a pork farmer. He's a giant human being, like in what he does on his farm and his actual physical stature. He's a very large human. But his Berkshire hogs are amazing.
And, I remember meeting Larry Sorrell and his wife, Madonna, who are, you know, they are the keepers of the Red Wattle breed. They've created this amazing network, primarily of Amish farmers out in the Midwest and Missouri area, who are all raising these pure Red Wattle pigs now, and Larry and Madonna themselves are getting a little older, so we'll go visit them, and but they'll still cook for us, and they're so welcoming. They're wonderful.
But
so,
I think with that, you also have to talk about the pig they're raising and Red Wattle, the breed itself. That's a fattier pig. We make bacon from it. People request that. Like, not only, you know, is it the farmer, but it's what they're raising. And that's what Heritage Foods is all about, these different breeds that we're saving, the genetics, because the taste is so much different and each breed has its own taste. And it's so much more flavorful than commodity meat.
I think along with the chefs, you need to also mention the great Cure Masters that we get to work with. And that was one of the best, a lot of perquisites on this gig, working for Heritage. And one of the best was getting to go down to Kentucky and Tennessee with the gang and seeing Al Benton and the Newsom's shop and their cure rooms and interviewing some hams. Trying to get the mutt juiced out of a room full of would-be prosciutti. these people are superstars.
For meat is like what wine is done for wine. You know, you talk about different vintages, different varietals. They come out at different times of year. You know, like our prosciutti people take their hams through 8 different rooms to recreate the seasons. So, you know, we don't really see meat in this country the way we do wine. But we should.
Wine and prosciutto, I mean, they have a lot in common. It's incredibly time-consuming to make a prosciutto. I mean, from the time a pig is born to a time, you know, you can put it on a piece of bread is years. Mm-hmm. I mean, the investment in time and knowledge and, of course, generations and generations of experience, it's incredible. And Patrick was just saying today, he knows 100 people who make salami. He knows, you know, 5 that make prosciutto or country-aged hams. It's just so time-consuming. You have to invest in the product years before you get to see anything out of it.
And you need, like, a football field-sized warehouse, which most people don't have.
Right. Speaking of the prosciutto, can you tell the story about Cesare and what he did here in the States with... Yeah.
Well, Emily's the best person to tell that story because she used to work with Cesare.
That's right.
I'm just the translator for Cesare. That was my first time on Heritage Radio, was a couple years ago, maybe more. I don't know. When was the last time Patrick had his show? But Cesare was on to be interviewed. I was his assistant at the time, and Cesare talked and said a lot of nice things that I don't think most of the listeners understood because he has such a heavy accent. And then Patrick looked at me and was like, so can you sum up everything that just happened in the last 40 minutes and make it concise in 2? And I was bright red and nervous, probably like I am now.
Well, who is Cesare?
So Cesare Casella is a, I don't want to say former, but former chef in terms of having his own kitchen here in New York. He's from Tuscany, from Italy. And he's been in New York maybe 25 years or so. And as a chef, always dreamed of really pursuing charcuterie. It was something that was in his family, in his blood, in sort of the way of the Tuscans and the traveling butchers that would come to visit homes every year and help you butcher your pig and turn it into salami. So Cesare, a couple of years ago, was sort of ending a relationship with one of his restaurants and was in need of a new project, but figuring out what he was going to do. And right around that time, Patrick happened to call him because Sam Edwards, one of our longtime friends and amazing cure masters, who's doing a more southern country ham, it had a fire in his smokehouse. And for us, one of the most important parts of the pig to move every week, while every single cut down to the tail matters, the ham is heavy and it's a big part. And so we really look to our cure masters that Mike was talking about, Newsom, Benton, you know, everyone, Broadbent, Volpe, Casella's, Edwards, everyone, and Duya Artisans. It's 30 pounds on each side. It's a big part. And so Patrick called Cesare and was like, I need help. Sam had a fire. I have a year's worth of pigs on the ground. What can I do? Can you help? Can you take a ham or two? And Cesare was like, let me call you back. And so he called him back and...
What the fuck do I do with a one a ham? That doesn't help you or me.
So that's actually what he said. And I wasn't working for him at the time, so maybe it wasn't translated properly. But and then he called him back and he said, okay, I've always wanted to do this. I've always done salami, but prosciutto is really, you know, the thing I've always wanted to do. It takes time. It takes space. I have a plant where I can do it. Send me a pallet. we're going to get started. Send me 68 to 100 hams a week, sometimes 200. And fast forward 2 years, and an incredible Italian-style American heritage prosciutto is here, in addition to all the other wonderful cure masters we work with. But Cesare is local to us here in New York, you know, with, embodies everything that Italy is. But to be using our heritage hams exclusively has been really fun and exciting, and the product is delicious. Roberta's actually uses it on their pizza, so you can go taste it after if you want. But it's been, for me, selfishly, really fun to go from working with someone like Cesare to now being at Heritage and still working so closely with him.
And it was written up in the New York Times, and I've tasted it. It is amazing.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
To Ben and Patty, the two chefs, Patty especially, what are the differences of the breeds? Like, Patty's just getting the thing, but how are the breeds different? Like, when you cook the lamb and it's the same cup, but just from a different breed, like, or Cesare, when he looks at his four breeds of prosciutto and he's like, each one's so different from one another. Like, have you made any observations about those nuances?
I guess when it comes to pork, the most obvious is the marbling and fat content. I've noticed that through our Red Wattle versus our Berkshire, down through Tamworth and Duroc. But when it comes to other breeds, perhaps Patty's a little more nuanced with, like, the differences between, like, a Tunis leg and perhaps a Dorset leg of lamb.
Yeah, I think it's pretty similar. It's the fat content, and I would like to say the amount that the animal has exercised throughout its life because of the muscle structure. Everything tastes different. Their feed, yeah, and the region that they're from is just, they just taste different.
Yeah.
Cool. Patty, I also want to ask you a little bit too about, like, can you kind of describe, it's so fascinating to me when, like, you're in the warehouse cooking and taking doing photo shoots, because a lot of those things you're photographing go into the catalog and on the website, and they look, I mean, they are beautiful images, and they look like they're at someone's, like, fancy dinner table, but you're in a warehouse and you're using not, like, professional kitchen equipment. So
she's using a toaster oven. It is amazing. I am not a good cook. It is amazing what Patty can do in that warehouse.
I've learned so much from watching Patty distill it. No, there's no question about it. I mean, my technique in the old lodge pan is so much better, you know, for having worked with you.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, I learned a lot of tricks. I mean, like, sort of searing the fat cap and doing the edges first, and then cooking. We're talking about a pork chop. In, you know, so instead of using oil in the pan or whatever, I'm using the fat from the pork chop. I learned that from you, and started vertically. You know, and, you know, kind of, you know, with the pork chop at a 90-degree angle to the pan, and then going back and forth, which is great. You know, there are a lot of tricks. It's, you know, there's a lot of nuance actually to cooking a pork chop, especially when they're cut thick.
It's one of the things where limitation almost breeds creativity. Do you find that?
Absolutely. Yep.
So yeah, describe us, like, what's a typical day of, like, doing a photo shoot?
It's just like the porn business. It's like, it's, you know, like down in the valley, you know, everything looks good, but it's really just a warehouse.
Oh my God.
Well, with the launch of the new website coming up, that this was really important to us. So we kind of rebranded in the fall. We found a new logo.
Which looks amazing. I love it.
Yes, we love that. We literally found it, Ben found that in the warehouse, and then we worked for it. It was a stamp. And so with that, and then us being here and, you know, really wanting to be able to scale the business, we're working to launch a new website. And with that, we want everything on brand and a new look. So we got a little photo studio set up in the warehouse, and that's where Patty has really come in and been doing it.
Yeah, everything basically, you're able to get beautiful color on any lodge cast iron and an inductionist, which is what we use. And the toaster oven really just evens out the inside of the meat. Yeah.
Toaster oven's pretty great.
Yeah.
Little Breville guy. It's nice. You can do roasting or, what was it, like air frying?
Air frying.
Pretty cool.
And I just love some days, especially when the weather's nice, you'll walk by and the warehouse door will be open and you're using the natural light to take photos. Yes.
That's, I think, the most flattering way to photograph food is natural sunlight. Sometimes it's hard, though, because the clouds shift and you're constantly resetting.
Or there's a dog running through the warehouse. Yeah. One of the many dogs.
Flies. That's our big problem we cook food.
There's no flies or dogs in the warehouse. You're insane. Yeah. There's no flies or dogs.
They're imaginary. awesome. Well, guys, this has been really fun, and I'm glad that we talk about heritage foods a lot, but it's really cool to like hear the day-to-day of what you guys actually do there, because it takes a lot. I know it takes a lot to actually live up to the eat 'em to save 'em motto. There's a lot of work that goes on behind the scenes.
And I'll say one thing. Running a meat business with fresh meat, going in and out, annual events where like 10,000 turkeys will get killed or 5,000 ducks in a day. And, you know, it's very hard to run a meat business like that and move all this stuff and not have any spoilage and take care of something that's expiring while also keeping up the mission side of things, you know, and education and the events. So it is really an unbelievable team, you know, that is running that network. I mean, it's just, I'm so proud to work with these guys, and aww, it's an honor and all.
Well,
that.
A sure sign,
I'm amazed I'm standing here, except for Mike.
Thanks. But a sure sign of Patrick's success is how many imitators he has, and how many people are trying to co-opt the word heritage, and how many people are running around claiming to be something of which they have no real bona fides, except no substitutes.
Yeah.
An educated consumer is our best customer.
Awesome. Awesome. We should go to the suit business, you and me.
I just invented that.
Yeah, I know. Everybody here is too young to know what the hell you're talking about.
I know. I could take credit for it.
All right. Well, since I'm going to change pace. Do you have something else to say, Mike?
just marveling at the youth in this room.
The youth and the women of heritage, because it's International Women's Day. So,
Studio Ben, walk out. Just back out.
So I'm going to turn it over to Sam Lee, our trivia master, because she has some International Women's Day trivia for us.
Get excited,
and I haven't
folks.
Seen it, so I'm playing too.
There is nothing trivial about International Women.
You're right.
No,
you're
that's right.
Right.
Hold
that's
on.
Right.
I'm going to put
good answer. That's right. This is what a feminist looks like, yo.
All right. So, yeah, we're going to quiz you on our nation's female heritage today.
Who's Michelle Obama?
That is not the answer to the first question. I'll give you that hint right away. So your first question is that while activists around the nation were trying to get rid of all the Confederate statues, we are also trying to break the bronze ceiling for women and get more statues of women around. So Central Park is slated to get its first two statues of women in 2020. First real women. They have fictional women in
like
the park
Alice
already. So who are the two women that are getting parks, getting statues in Central Park, and they are both from the suffrage movement?
Oh, so it's not Beyonce.
I wish.
Katie Stanton?
That is, Elizabeth Katie Stanton is one. Elizabeth yeah. Nice. Who's the second one? Women's suffrage, folks?
I'm like Seneca Falls. Who are the people?
Clara Barton? No.
No?
That's...
I want to say Lucretia Mott, but that's probably wrong.
It involves a middle initial.
Oh, Susan B. Anthony.
Correct, yeah. I'm like, what do I do for him?
Suffragette City.
There you go.
Yeah.
I know, like the queen of all suffragettes.
I wasn't fond of her coin, though, I have to say.
I was going to give a hint of money, I guess.
Yeah, the Susan B. Anthony dollar is kind of a non-starter.
I was like questioning in my head if that was, I was like, that's a thing, right? Okay, it's the dollar, Susan B. Anthony dollar.
You guys
dollar?
Don't remember the Eisenhower dollar.
My dad collects coins.
That'll
so
be next
why.
Week's round of trivia will be about
coin
now,
currency.
Now they're like worth a dollar.
Yeah.
All the way.
All right, question two. So as a nation, we got the 19th Amendment to vote in 1920, but the first state to give the right to vote to women was in 1870, which is a western territory that is now nicknamed the Equality State. What state was the first to give women the right to vote? If you happen to know what the Equality State is, it is western. It is not Oregon.
It Patrick, starts... you have any guesses?
No, I'm just going to guess
a lot
the
of
Western
farming.
State. I'm nervous.
It starts
that I'm
with a W. There's a lot of ranching
state.
There.
It's Wyoming.
Yeah.
Oh.
Ladies in Wyoming were voting in 1870. On state issues.
What happened to that state since then?
I know, right? It's a lot of. Maybe it was just that there were so few women. They're like, sure. Sure, all three of you can vote.
It's like Dick Cheney territory, Wyoming.
All right, number three. On International Women's Day in 2015, an artist created a group of new Lego figurines for the first female, four female Supreme Court justices, and she called it the Legal Justice League. So, who were the first four
Ruth
female?
Bader Dinah Ross,
the notorious RBG.
Well, RBG for sure.
Sandra Day O'Connor.
Sotomayor, yeah. And one more.
Caden.
Yeah, Elena Kagan.
Wow. Tina Turner. Yeah. Who is Tina Turner?
Teamwork makes the dream work.
So close, Mike. So close.
All right, your fourth question is, 19th century culinary expert Fanny Farmer is often called the mother of level measurements because she helped standardize the cooking measurements that we now take for granted. So how many tablespoons are in a cup? 16 is correct.
Oh, very nice.
Which is nice. Two sticks of butter?
Yeah. That sounds right. Yeah. Eight tablespoons per stick.
I measure things in
butter.
I mean,
it depends on which stick.
I don't
like
bake,
a true
but
Southerner.
I'm really fascinated with those spoons.
You just start doing things with your hands.
It's kind of a drug thing. Those spoons are...
Like the ones that are attached to
each
other?
Yeah.
Like the sets of measuring spoons.
Yeah, I could play the spoons.
Oh, get someone get Mike's spoons.
I know, someone go get some measuring spoons.
I'll have a music break.
All right. While we're waiting for that to happen, your next question is this. What college, which is the alma mater of girls creator Lena Dunham, became the first co-ed college in the U.S. in 1837? Liza's raising her hand. Yes,
don't
Liza?
I actually know this because of Lena Dunham, but I think it's Oberlin.
It is.
Ohio.
Yeah.
Oberlin is correct in Ohio.
I also went to Oberlin. Shout out.
Lila is an alum. All right. Number six. What coal miner's daughter recorded a song called The Pill, which was released in 1975 and is often credited with destigmatizing taking birth control? Loretta Lynn is correct.
That was a question
amazing
made
lady.
For Mike.
Well, I know, Mike was like, give it to me,
young,
give it to me.
Yeah? I don't know what y'all
I
know.
I love Loretta Lynn. I
don't know who knows what anymore.
All right.
You know, how
who played her in the movie?
Hipsters love Loretta Lynn.
Sissy Spacek, right?
Sissy Spacek.
Wow.
Yeah, we got a bonus question in there. Yeah, from
you're
Patrick.
On a roll.
Who's Michelle Obama?
Mike, sing her top song. Give us the rhythm to her top song.
That's the answer, right?
Coal Miner's Daughter. Yeah. How does it go, Mike?
I'll tell you what, though. Loretta Lynn made that great record with Jack White, too, for all you kids.
Yeah, really good.
That's a great record.
So, Mike, you don't know her song. All right, well, I thought you did.
He's pretending he doesn't hear you. Okay, seventh and final question. Margaret Sanger coined the term, speaking of birth control, and she opened the first birth control clinic in the U.S. right here in Brooklyn in 1916. What birth control? What organization did this eventually turn into?
Planned Parenthood.
Yay!
I thought the question was going to be like, who inspired the movement towards birth control? And I was going to answer Mike Edison. Just kidding. Sorry.
I've done my part.
We tease each other.
That's
all
not
the
like
time.
Very layered insult, Patrick.
Just kidding.
All right, Sam, thanks for the trivia. That was very
thanks
fun.
That was
awesome.
That
good
was
job reading
time.
It.
Oh, thanks.
Hey, Patrick.
I graduated college.
I have one last question for Patrick.
Who was Aretha Franklin?
Who is accredited with inventing the spoon?
We talked about Catherine de' Medici bringing the fork into Europe.
That's what it was.
Yes.
You know what I meant.
I'm happy to help write the trivia as well.
Who invented the spork?
The spork. That sounds post-1945.
Who invented the Coke spoon?
Probably the same person that invented the connected teaspoons.
You guys remember when McDonald's had to change their coffee spoons because they were like Coke spoons?
By the way, did you hear that McDonald's turned their...
Absolutely.
he's got a sock drawer full of them. He's like, he freaked out and stopped up. Yeah.
Did you hear that McDonald's has turned some of their M's upside down to look like W's for National Women's Day?
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about that.
I know, it's weird, huh?
Yeah. On that note...
Thanks to everybody for joining us today. The Heritage Foods team, Patrick Martins, Emily Pearson, Ben Tanzel, Patty Lee, Catherine Greeley, Elizabeth Greeley, and Mike Edison. And thanks to all my HRN crew for being here as well. Be sure to catch all of our interviews from Charleston Wine and Food once again, and tune in next week. We're going to have the team from Nighthawk Cinema here, Chef Kurt Applegate and Beverage Director Matt Walker. They do some really amazing stuff with food and drink pairings and menus to go along with your movies. So tune into that. We'll be back Thursday at 5 p.m. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.
HRN Happy Hour is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.